talking to Greg Pallast here, author of Armed Madhouse, who's bringing out a new book on Tuesday. Greg, you mentioned at the beginning that there's a new chapter on New Orleans.
Yes, in the Busted.
Busted.
And, go ahead.
And Katrina, I think, is sort of becoming, possibly along with the Iraq War, is probably the second largest problem for the Bush administration in terms of...
I hope so. Because, well, they're not really different. It's like New Orleans is Baghdad on the Mississippi. Look, the new chapter is called Busted because I was charged with violating the anti-terrorism laws of the U.S. by the Department of Homeland Security, believe it or not. And that's because I was filming. I was filming what they don't want me to film. 73,000 residents of New Orleans, by the way, that's a fourth of the city, have been dumped into the swamplands 100 miles away from the city. They've lost their jobs because they can't get to work. They have no homes. They're not even allowed to rebuild them. And they've dumped them into a place known as Cancer Alley, right next to the Exxon oil refinery. And I was filming this like Guantanamo on wheels, because they put people in these old mobile homes. And I was charged because I was taking photos of critical infrastructure. Like Osama could look at my pictures of poor people sucking soot from Exxon's pollution machine. And he'll say, oh, I want to go there and, I'm going to take out the refinery. And I finally point out to Homeland Security after 2 days back and forth with this that if Osama wanted to take out the refinery, all he had to do is go on Google Map. But it wasn't – they weren't trying to protect America from terrorists. They were trying to protect America from the information that this is where we have dumped people to die. As far as I could tell, they're staying there forever. This was taken a year after the film. 73,000 people still stuck there. Now, after the flood, the other thing I found that they didn't like was is that how did those people that were left in the water, how did they drown? And I discovered, talking to the head of the LSU, Louisiana State University Hurricane Center, the people running the hurricane evacuation, they told me, the chief, a guy named Ivor Van Heerden, he'd been holding this information to himself. He couldn't stand anymore. He said, someone's got to speak out. Let me lose my job. What he was saying was that George Bush's White House, he emphasized the White House, not just the government, the White House knew 20 hours or so before the levees burst that they were cracking apart and the city's going to flood. He was running the operation of the Hurricane Center in Louisiana, the state of Louisiana, and they stopped evacuating New Orleans. They were all congratulating each other. Katrina never hit the city. It went east of the city, so they're evacuating east. The White House didn't tell them that the levees were failing, and those things collapsed, and 1,500 people drowned. And so people think it's bad, think that George Bush screwed up. It's worse than that. It's worse than that.
So the public story of what happened in New Orleans is just not fully told yet.
No, it isn't, because he's still doing the water surged over the top of the levees and all that type of. Come on, they broke apart and he knew they were breaking. He didn't want what happens is that once these are federal government levees, if they break, it's George Bush's responsibility to save the people. It's George Bush's and the federal government's responsibility to compensate them and bring them back. They don't want that. They want to say it wasn't us. And then what I also found out is that there was an evacuation plan for New Orleans. Where was it? How come people weren't evacuated? How come people were left behind? And the answer was that they had privatized, believe it or not, emergency evacuation. They had contracted out to cronies of Bush who got $1 million. And when I saw their plans, because I had worked on hurricane evacuation for a very rich area, Long Island, New York, where there's no plan to let people float away in the rich areas. Huge, elaborate plans. In New Orleans, you couldn't find the plans. When I found them by the crony contractors, the plan was get in your car, drive like hell. What if you don't have a car? 127,000 people in New Orleans did not have cars, a fourth of the city, and they were left there. And so what happened was, I went to the contractors and said, what's your experience in emergency evacuation? And they couldn't tell me that they'd ever done any emergency planning ever at all. And they got the contract 2 years before the hurricane. 2 years before. And the answer was that their total experience, as far as I could tell, was page after page of donations to the Republican Party.
So how do we have a situation where 2 years after this hurricane and this huge disaster, which obviously has affected both political process and the people of America very profoundly, these sorts of details are still emerging as a result of your investigations? What's going on with the U.S. media?
They're dead. We had, you know, you cannot. Because it's one thing to say, oh, they, you know, we had one very rich reporter famously cry in front of the cameras, how could they treat people this way in the Superdome? You can talk about bureaucrats being mean to people. What you can't talk about is the President of the United States drowning 1,500 people and then going off to a golf resort, knowing that the levees are cracking and saying nothing. If you say that, no one has challenged the veracity of this report. No one has challenged the integrity of my source, who has named himself. But they're not going to put that on the air.
And they're not going to follow it up.
Forget it. I mean, all that's going to happen is make sure that I will always be working for the BBC. Because, I mean, basically, this does. You have to understand what happens here is more than just silencing. You know, not covering the news. It's a program of silencing the news.
Now, some of the proceeds of your activities are going into this thing called the Palace Investigative Fund.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, it's real simple. Investigative reporting, one of the reasons they don't do it is it's really expensive. I mean, for me to, for example, find out the purge list took months of work and its whole team. First of all, Greg Palast is just the nose on camera. I got a whole team of people. A quadrilingual, Bond girl from Switzerland, we set up fronts, we go undercover, we do secret filming, secret recording. I mean, this is really expensive, dangerous, and the legal costs alone, my God. So to cover this, we do two things. I'm grateful for BBC and Harper's and others who've given us, you know, some funding and of course, a platform. But by the way, to put it out in the U.S., I give this stuff free of charge to a program called Democracy Now! And the only way I can do that is to get some donations, and I don't like going to big foundations and any of that stuff. I don't do it. I don't have any foundation money. We just ask people who watch and read our books to send a couple bucks, $50, $100. I'll sign a book. And I do that so that I'm beholden to my readers and not to a network, not to a foundation, not to anyone, but the people who are watching my reports and reading my material. And that's it. No advertisers.
Now, you are finding, of course, that there's a very, very widespread internet dissemination of your material, and you use the internet very, very very
yeah.
well and effectively.
And in fact, by the way, I'm not copywriting any part of my book, which is very unusual, even though it's a New York Times bestseller. I want the word out. Go use it. It's a weapon. It's a weapon of mass instruction. And by the way, go to the website, www.gregpalast.com, and you can hear some of the audio of the book. I got the comics like Larry David and Greg Proops reading this material. But we also have dance tracks, and Jello Biafra has produced a spoken word CD, which will also release next week, called Live from the R Madhouse. Greg Palast making trouble, and including some dance tracks, which are samples of from the book R Madhouse. So there you go. So you can dance to it.
So it's a bit of a media revolution, really, what you're undertaking.
If I have to do skywriting, whatever it takes to get the word out, I'm not going to rely on U.S. networks in particular. I mean, look, I've got it easy in Britain and the Commonwealth. You can turn on the TV and watch me. But you can't do it in the U.S., so I have to use, you know, do things like have musicians. Like, for example, I think one of the more interesting ones is that Eminem did a video based on my stuff called Mosh. And, so if that's the way to get it out, I'm for it.
How is it then that people like Michael Moore are able to have a mainstream audience in the United States?
Well, he was he did some smart stuff. I mean, he's been very helpful. You know, basically, he took a lot of my material and popularized it. And what he does is he was able to get away with his programs by Well, he was thrown off television, so that was gone, even though he's a popular show. But they couldn't take away the movie screen from him, even though Disney tried to. And the answer is that he comes out as entertainment. He does the kind of clown act, so they can, and it's good because it's a way to get it out. It's bad because he's dismissed as a clown. But that's but the information is solid. I know because I provide it. You know, so you know. But if that's another way to get it out. In fact, our little joke at BBC is if Greg Palast can't get his reports on the air in America, just give it to the fat guy with the chicken suit.
Are you still trying to get stuff into the New York Times and the big papers and networks over there?
Well, you know what? I do try. Just I owe it to the public to give it a shot. But I have to tell you, Bobby Kennedy just asked the head of ABC Television, the big ABC network, which is owned by Disney, the big Disney network, television network. Why don't you run Greg Powell's BBC reports? Because they have a deal with BBC; they can run them for free. And the answer is, we'd love to. And so then they call, they were just giving him the old jive, and they called me up at Bobby Kennedy's request and basically told me in so many words, you can forget it, Palast. Right? So there you go.
Because the other broadcaster is Keith Olbermann, who seems to have a peculiar... I mean, he seems to be allowed to.
Yeah, to some extent, one thing I'll say, and I'm not bitter about it, but where was Olbermann when the going was tough? I mean, guys who like totally licked Bush's, Bush's behind, like Bob Woodward, who wrote Bush at War. Woodward went from writing All the President's Men to becoming one of the President's Men, and the problem was. But now he takes some pot shots. So these guys are pretty good at coming out of the woodwork and shooting the wounded. But you're not gonna see anything too heavy on these things. You're gonna see a lot of dissent until the winds change and they'll change with it.
Now, on a slightly more serious level, the overall picture that you get from a lot of what you're saying is that the political process is corrupt. And we look at the Bush family, and they obviously have ties to banking industries and the oil industry and various other things. Are we talking about corporate fascism here? I mean, is this really what's happening in the United States these days?
No. And people are going to be shocked to hear me say that. And the reason I say that is that it's not 1933. We ain't got that bad yet. And I say that with good caution because it could get bad. Be careful. But I think it's more like 1927. In 1927, as I point out in our madhouse, when the levees broke in New Orleans and the city drowned, it was a time of corporate aristocracy. You could call it corporate fascism. The Republicans were in charge of all edges of government. It was grim. And the Democratic Party seemed like it had no answers. They were weak and they had nothing to say. And then one guy rose up from the floodwaters of Louisiana and said, enough already. It's time that we kicked the rich in the ass and got our fair share. We need a system of old age pensions. We need free schools in America. We need to tax the oil companies so that they stop using the money on bogus wars. And that was a guy named Huey Long, and his program was adopted by Franklin Roosevelt. It became the New Deal, and America was changed, and Hitler was destroyed. So I think it's 1927, 1933 Germany. It's 1927 Louisiana again.
Well, if it's 1927, then next year's 1928, and there's another election.
Yeah, and so what I would say is that there is look, we saw in the U.S. midterm election, they still stole races, but, you can't steal all the votes all the time. And with that, I'm going to leave you. And say that, pick up a copy of our madhouse before Patriot Act 3 goes into effect in America, and then they'll have to confiscate it. And I'll see you at the Scoop Wing at Guantanamo next year.
Thank you very much.
Okay, catch you later.
Bye-bye.